concealment is wrong. If there were none, half the problems of the world would disappear overnight. There would be no snooping, and therefore no fixing. There would be no blackmail, and therefore no fear in the world, other than physical fear. That wouldn't be a bad start. And not only is all secrecy a sin, but it also isn't going to work. My spies tell me that there are already in existence machines which can collect and tabulate all the relevant detail about the private life of everybody in this theater, and can then store it in a space that big. Now, if this can be done, it will be done, because the machines are greater than men, and their watchfulness is invincible. And if this is so, our attitude toward them should be existential. Do you understand that word? An existentialist is somebody who realizes that he can only exercise his free will by swimming with the tide, but faster. Therefore, if the machines will triumph in the end, why don't we make ourselves over to them from the very beginning? By 1984, riveted into the wall of every home in America will be a one-way television screen through which you will see nothing, which might be a relief. But through it, you will be watched by Big Brother. Now, George Orwell, who wrote 1984 and who foresaw this situation, he became completely neurotic about it. But why? I don't know how things are here, but in London, we waltz round the city with half our hair painted pink and the other half painted green, jingling with amulets, razor blades, safety pins, creating no sensation whatsoever. And when we get home, we feel thoroughly defeated. But in only 5 years' time, when you get back to your room and you start to undress, you will realize you are still of abiding interest to somebody. Mr. Carter will care. Now, all you have to do to get this situation onto your own terms is to decide what image of yourself you are going to present to his abiding scrutiny. No excuses are acceptable. I say this because whenever I suggest to anybody that he should develop his lifestyle, he immediately says, "I'm not wise enough, witty enough, handsome enough. Beauty is a complete waste of time." Because without even knowing it, we still cringe in the shadow of classical ideals of beauty. The Greeks were mad about the human body, so much so that during its heyday, Athens must have looked like an outfitter's window during a weaver's strike. But it was no help. Not one of the great classical statues has the least physical individuality which would make it desirable or even interesting. So beauty you will never need. But I can give you further proof. There was once a man whose name was Mr. Tillett, but he was known as the Angel. He was shorter than I am, but he was twice as wide, and his head was as long from the chin to the crown as the skull of a donkey. His pate was bald, but the rest of his body was covered with fur, right down to his fingernails. When his employer first saw him, she fainted. Nevertheless, he made more money in 4 short years as a wrestler than the divine Joe Louis made out of a lifetime in the boxing ring. Now, to me, Mr. Tillett's life was a positive parable of style. He took that which made him so like himself, regardless of whether it made him better or worse than other people. And he put it in its appropriate setting. He put it where it would do the most good. And that, to my mind, is what all of you have to learn to do. I've been forbidden to rattle on about the amount of money that Mr. Tillett made. I've been told that I equate wealth with style. I don't, but I would say this. To a physicist, money would be the solid state of style. You understand that? You can convert your style into riches and enjoy them, or you can enjoy your style just the way it is. There's no other connection between the two. And of this also, I can give you an example. Until recently, there was in Soho, the hooligan district of London, a woman known as the Countess. But in spite of this, she had in fact no fixed address and no means of support, and her body was perpetually bent double from a lifelong habit of looking in the dustbins to see if she could possibly find there something she could sell to a kind friend, or if not, that she herself could use. And one day, in a trash can in the most expensive part of London, she found a complete backless bead dress. She longed for night to fall, so that she could nip into a dark doorway and try it on. But by about 6:30, her patience had worn out. It was barely dusk, but she went into a churchyard in the middle of London, and there she proceeded to take off her clothes. This caused a crowd to collect. And the crowd caused a policeman to collect. And the next day, in court, when the magistrate said, "And what exactly were you doing, stripping among the dead?" she replied, "I was doing what any woman would be doing at that hour, changing for dinner."